I like that. But we're going to start with this. Top Gun instructor Colt Bancroft has just catapulted off the USS Abraham Lincoln, his F-35C Joint Strike Fighter trailing blue and yellow flame as he climbs into the night sky off the California coast. When he is sent to investigate a series of mysterious lights floating dangerously close to his aircraft carrier, disaster strikes. His jet becomes unresponsive as it rolls inverted and enters a nosedive aimed right at the aircraft carrier's unsuspecting escort cruiser. What follows is a tale of heroism and betrayal, spycraft and suspense, and aerial combat against an unexpected adversary. To clear his name and unmask a traitor, Colt must survive a dangerous game of spy versus spy, where trusting the wrong person could cost him his life. To stop the enemy from hitting their ultimate target, Colt must use every ounce of his skill and training and uncover the identity of the unknown rider. Now, that is definitely not Ray Porter, but hey, welcome to the show, Jack Stewart. What's up, brother?
Man, that was fantastic. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad it started off like that because I think UAPs, brother. But when you're thinking like UAPs and then you're thinking, hey, you know what? This might be some spycraft. Where are we going with this, brother? This is a thriller. This isn't science fiction, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not science fiction. But I mean, you touched on exactly UAPs is what I kind of based that on. There was an article I read a couple years ago about basically that same thing happening, strange lights circling a Navy ship off the coast of California. And I thought it was fascinating. The article had the FBI getting involved and they were trying to find out what the source of these lights were. And so I decided to figure out, you know, for myself what they were. And so I made them be something which will be unveiled in the book if you read it. But it's pretty interesting.
Well, you know, UAPs, can we even say science fiction anymore if everybody's saying, hey, they're real? Well, the other thing too is like drone technology is crazy. There was what do you call it? Synchronized drones now. Like if you see ones in Dubai and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I haven't seen anything to that scale, but I went and saw a Metallica concert, and this was several years ago now. And they had these drones flying all around them, doing different things above their head, above the stage. And I thought it was pretty fascinating. So
I'm so obsessed with not obsessed. Okay. The truth is out there. Okay. We're like David Duchovny here in X-Files. But no, the thing with talking to you too is you came from that background. You know, you were a fighter pilot and you've seen things. I'm sure you've seen things. Now, have you disclosed on air that you've seen things?
Yes, I have. I have said it. There was only one incident where I saw something that couldn't be described, like with known technology. And I have talked about it. My wingman and I, after doing a training sortie over the Gulf of Mexico, we saw something, both of us at first, like when I saw it, I just sort of dismissed it. Like, okay, that's, you know, just a glare off the canopy or something. But when he said it, I was like, okay, there really was something there. And so we went back and we talked about it. We tried to debunk it. I mean, we had the models out on sticks and we're moving them around going, okay, if you were here and I was here, and we couldn't figure it out. So we filled out a report that made its way to the Pentagon. And the next day we were given a classified brief from the Pentagon on these UAPs. And it was pretty interesting experience. I mean, you know, I wish I had some really good footage to show. Maybe I'd be, you know, called before Congress or something, but it was just pretty interesting.
Well, there are so many pilots. So it's not like it's like, you know, one or two people and, you know, you could kind of debunk them if, you know, check their drug tests and their psych backgrounds and stuff. But like when it's like a massive amount of pilots.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And how many people do you think you know personally that have seen something they can't explain?
I mean, personally, I probably know one or two, you know, but one of the things that brief that we got showed was the amount of reporting and how it has increased. And they're trying to remove that stigma of, you know, the tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist kind of thing. So they're trying to get people to report it because, you know, as the military, like, we need to know what is flying in our airspace, period. Whether it's alien, whether it's foreign, whether it's, you know, just space trash just floating around in the air. I mean, we need to know what it is. And so they're trying to you know, remove that stigma so that people will actually report this and we can actually get to the bottom of it.
I love the idea that, you know, stigma, you know, especially coming from the military and LEO and everywhere else we've been, stigma is one of the biggest things to get through. And like at one time, like you said, the tinfoil hat, the conspiracy and everything, you don't talk about stuff like that. And now we could talk about stuff like that. Now we could talk about like everything else. And the other thing I want to talk to you today was about mental health. You know, you just transition after decades in service.
Yeah.
You know, coming from like, you know, the pointy tip of the air. And that must be, you know, a very interesting form of like, you know, in one way it's stress relief because you're not dealing with it every day. You don't have that type of pressure. But then you're like, huh, that was a big part of my life. That was my identity for so many years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely, you know, I think a lot of people have said this before, but you know, when you come from the military to going to be a civilian, you have, you know, taken your entire identity, all your, I mean, you wake up, you know what you're going to put on, you know what your clothes are going to look like that day. You know where you're going to go. You're told what to do. And all that is now gone, and you have to sort of figure out your own way through life. And if you, you know, if you've been doing that since 18 years old, that's a big, big, but you know, I was fortunate that in my case, I did the reserves for the last 11 years of my career. So I had kind of one foot out the door already. Half the time I was having to figure out myself what clothes to wear and what to do. You know, another half I was being told. So it was a little bit easier for me, but still you know, it is a big part of your identity. You know, for me it was, you know, I'm a fighter pilot. And now I'm a has-been fighter pilot, just an airline pilot now. And so I'm just trying to find a new identity, and there's some stress involved in that. And it's one of the things that I think,
you know, I'm going to stop you right there. You found your new identity.
Awesome. I'm working on it. I'm working
on it. You're not even working on it. I mean, you have Ray Porter in there. The book sounds like it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to listen to it. I swear, I'm like this narrator thing to me is like, because I do a lot of the rucking and I do a ton of road trips. You know, I'm always on the road and I don't have a lot of time to sit and read. And when a lot of times when I sit and read, it's like a nonfiction or something where I could, you know, I'm either reading it to write an article or I'm reading it like to get some sort of knowledge base. I don't have a lot of time for fun reading. Not that nonfiction is not fun, but I love listening to books. So now you have Ray Porter, which was one of the premier, like, you know, he just did what? Andrews and Wilson, Sons of Valor.
Mm-hmm.
He did them.
Yep, he did
them. And then all sorts of other awesome books. So it's going to be interesting to see how he blends your characters' voices.
Yeah, it's, you know, I got to listen to the audio files before they came out, and, It was funny because, like, I'd say the first couple of chapters, you know, I was just in, first of all, I was in awe that Ray Porter was reading my words because I've been such a huge fan of his for so long. And then I started critiquing the writing. I'm like, oh man,
stop.
I just said that. But after I, you know, just kind of put that in the back burner and just enjoyed the story, I really got into it. And he did such a fantastic job. I mean, I can't say enough good things about it. In fact, you know, I tell people almost like, if you want to think I'm a good writer, please buy the audiobook and listen to Ray do it, because he can make even the worst lines sound good.
Now, and you know, when you read, I mean, listen, you know, I can always navigate between read and listen, but when you're listening to him and when you're listening to a lot of these great narrators, you're immersed in the story, and you're like, huh. This, I see where this is kind of going now, but then you're like, huh, maybe I don't. And like, he throws you around. Cause I just listened to, Andrews and Wilson, Sons of Valor 3, and it throws you off a little bit here and there. So there's a lot of different things going on and you're like, huh, okay. Maybe I'm wrong about what's going on with this book.
Yeah. Yeah. It adds a whole new element. listening to it versus reading it. And I find both enjoyable. I'm always listening to an audiobook. I'm always reading something on my Kindle. And then I usually have a hardcover that I'm reading as well.
You know, there's one thing I do want to talk to you about today is like, I haven't made like an official announcement, like, hey, you know, I'm doing this, but I'm writing my first fiction book. And awesome. It's going to be more, it's not going to be like a thriller book. It's going to be more of like the crime mystery type book with some thriller elements in there. But writing to me is like I first started off, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write a thriller. Then I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then I'm like, I should really base it off of who my protagonist would be if it was quasi made of me. And I can kind of see that with the way you're writing your books is this, you know, quasi you in a weird way are the people you've encountered throughout your career.
Yeah.
And as I'm writing, do you do like, hey, I'm going to write chapter one, I'm going to write chapter two, or do you skip around a lot?
I definitely don't skip around. I always write chronologically from start to finish. Now I may, when I'm done, go back and add things later just to, you know, make it more clear, but I don't have a clearly defined plot from start to finish to where I can just go, hey, I'm going to write this chapter at the end of the book right now. It's just, for me, too many things can happen between what I am right now and then that all that good writing could just go out the window. And so I just don't even try. But I do have a loose idea. You know, I kind of know what the inciting incident is. So like an unknown writer, these lights that, and then, you know, Colt Bancroft losing control of his aircraft. That's the inciting incident. I kind of know that. In that book in particular, I didn't really know where it was going to go, but I knew, you know, how I wanted, like what kind of scenes I wanted at the end, but I wasn't sure how it was going to get there. So I didn't even bother trying to write the end. I just start to finish, which, you know, as a writer, at least for me, I enjoy it. It's, you know, I'd rather sit down, figure out where my story is going rather than turn on the TV and watch, you know, a series. You know, I'd rather figure out what my characters are doing.
I like that because I started doing that and I'm like, so I used to always like tell people, okay, when you're writing nonfiction, you need to do like a mind map because nonfiction is like, hey, the truth is out there. The facts are out there. You really just need to write about them. And you could write, you don't have to write in chronological order. Mm-hmm. But with the fiction book, I find the same thing. I'm like, I started writing chapter one. I'm like, oh shit, where are we going with chapter two? I'm like, oh, well, this is new. You know, it's like, okay, maybe I could do this and this and this. And it's like, it's really cool to think about, you know, writing some wrongs in your past or, you know, making some things different and like how you wish things worked out and how you wish this and that. And
oh, absolutely.
It's such a cool experience to write, man. And even if I never get published, at least I'm writing like something that I enjoy doing.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, kind of writing wrongs like you're talking about. That's one of the things that I wrote a book called Pony Up, which introduced this concept of what's called light attack. And it's not a new concept. In Vietnam, there was a squadron called VAL-4 in the Navy, the Black Ponies that flew the OB-10 Bronco in support of Naval Special Warfare and the boat teams in the Mekong Delta. And it was just for a few years after the war, the squadron was disestablished and that whole concept of light attack went away. Fast forward to the war on terror. And there were some high ranking people in the Pentagon that basically asked the special operators, what is it you need? And they all kind of said, you know, we need this light attack. We need a dedicated air support for us. And so the NSW started a program called Imminent Fury, flying the Super Tucano. The Super Tucano is a Brazilian made airplane. And so then you had politicians that were saying, well, now you can't lease a Brazilian made plane if we have an American made plane, you know, that. And so it ended up being a political thing. The program got scrapped, even though it was very successful. So SOCOM, a few years later, started a program called Combat Dragon 2, and they took the OV-10. They got them from NASA, I think, but they had started at the Marine Corps, went to ATF and a few other places, ended up at NASA. SOCOM took them, converted them, upgraded them, and they deployed it in an operational evaluation. And again, very successful, but Congress again gets in the way of everything and doesn't give the warfighter what they need. And so I'm seeing all this frustration. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. And so, you know, the series of my books ultimately ends up there. It ends up with the resurrection of VAL4, which was a concept that I came up with, of having a Navy F-18 pilot, strike fighter background, and the pilot in the front seat, and the back seat, a Navy SEAL who's JTAC qualified that can call in airstrikes and stuff like that. So,
and that's a cool thing about authors like you and a lot of people in this space, is like having that background, and you could write about it, you know, but you're like enthralled with it. Like, you love it. Like, it's like part of your blood. So when you're writing about it, you could tell. And, you know, some people, they could take a dry topic and make it really, really like just awesome. And some people could take a dry topic and keep it really dry because they have no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
But like, when you just have something that you just like, damn, man, F-35, we're going to do this. We're going to, you know, we're going to bring up possibilities, UAPs, and admit, you just don't know where it's going to end up. And I like stories like that. Now, before we jump on to the next big announcement or the next big topic, let's read some of these. I love these. From espionage to dogfights, this is a Mach 5 debut. Brad Taylor, retired Special Forces officer and New York Times bestselling author of the Pike Logan series. I got to throw a little Brad Taylor in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here we go. Stewart firewalls the throttles with the first sentence, keeps the afterburners howling until the end. Don Bentley, another New York Times bestselling author of Forgotten War. And then another one of my favorite authors, strongly evocative of classic Clancy, intensely paced and skillfully plotted, Mark Grady. Number one New York Times bestselling author, The Gray Man. I love it, brother. Oh, and Taylor Moore, there we go. Leaves readers breathless by the end and hungry for the next book. Taylor Moore, author of Firestorm. That's another book, another series I've been listening to. And I was like, ah, you know, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'll listen. And then I'm just hooked. And it's not like your typical thriller too. It's just like, his books are like just really solid.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like you're in Texas, man.
Yeah. Taylor is such a great guy too. And if you know, when you speak to him, he's just so humble, so soft spoken. And it's almost surprising the stories that he tells, because his books are really good and they have a lot of action, and it just doesn't fit with his personality because he's just such a nice, quiet guy.
And the thing about it too is like, it's different action. It's not like your stereotypical shoot 'em up, gun 'em up. Yeah. It's like slow burn, and then there's action. Yeah. Slow burn, then there's action. There's twists. Yeah. There's always twists in his. And I really enjoy that. But you have something else going on right now, man. You're teamed up with Chad Robichaud.
Yeah. Yeah. He's I got connected with him through Jeff Wilson, you know, Anderson Wilson. Mm-hmm. I was flying one day, and he Jeff texted me and said, "Hey, do you want to consider co-authoring a book with Chad Robichaud?" And I'm like, "Who?" You know, like I didn't know who he was. So I, you know, do a Google search, and I'm like, "Man, this guy's done some really impressive things." And you know, we had served in the same command with JSOC, and different times, didn't know each other, but, you know, at least kind of ran in the same circles. And so I reached out to him, and we just started talking. And immediately, before we even started talking about, you know, what books would be about, we just hit it off. I mean, he is such a genuine human being who has been through so much and given so much back and continues to give back. And that's his focus, is on, you know, Mighty Oaks Foundation, which he started, is focused on treating veterans with PTSD. And that's, you know, it was near and dear to him because he suffered from it. And, you know, he tells a story where, he was in the closet and he had a gun in his hand and pictures of his family, you know, laid out in front of him. And it was the end. And then his wife knocked on the door and he got mad that she interrupted him trying to kill himself. You know, and so to see him now to hear that story, it's obvious there's a transformation, and it's obvious that he is very passionate about this topic. And so I was like, this is a guy I want to work with. And so when we started talking, and One of the things that he did with JSOC was advanced force operations, which not a lot of people know about. You know, most of our military thrillers that we read about special operations are the guys kicking in doors and double tapping terrorists and, you know, these teams that do all this really cool high speed stuff. But what you don't see is that one person who goes in undercover to whatever country that is, sets up, you know, safe houses, sets up, you know, some sort of infrastructure, you know, of vehicles and interpreters and all this, everything that needs to happen for that operation to succeed, is what basically AFO is. And
yeah, I'm reading that right now. Like, as you're talking, I'm reading an article that Ryan Seck put out. Was like, to do this is from Chad. To do this, I turned my focus to developing a fiction series in which a main character followed a similar career path as mine. Like me, Foster Quinn was a Force Recon Marine who found himself with the JSOC Task Force. Like me, he left the uniformed military behind but stayed on as a singleton AFO operator to hunt down the most vile terrorists on the planet. And like me, he did so while navigating complex politics, lies, and deceit, his own inner battles, and a family at home. Through this series, I aim to give the reader a front row seat into the physical, emotional, spiritual sacrifices our nation's toughest warriors make. And to do this successfully, I needed to partner with someone who could help convey these sacrifices to a reader in a way that was both compelling and challenging, but also entertaining. After talking with several writers, I found Jack Stewart. Jack is not only an incredible writer, but a like-minded man who reached the pinnacle of his field in the U.S. Navy as an aviator and Top Gun advisory instructor. And now you're on a Protector's Pie. How do I get these guests? Yeah. How do I get these guests?
Jack Stewart, you just have such a great show. You just have such a great show.
I see New York Times bestseller in your future, brother. I do.
I mean, you know, that would obviously be fantastic. But it's funny because this series that, you know, my series starting with Unknown Rider, love that series. But it's a more of a techno thriller. It's obviously there are really good characters in it, I think. And there's that interpersonal conflict, which I think is so necessary in a thriller, but it leverages a lot of the tools and the weapons and the ships and the planes and all that stuff. The series that I'm doing with Chad, it's so emotional. I mean, mm-hmm. We're working on book two in the series right now. And, I just, you know, sent him my latest cut on one of the chapters, which was, very difficult for me to write because it's at home, Foster and his wife, you know, and there's a conflict there, and, you know, it tore at my heart because, you know, I know what most of our guys in the military go through when they have to leave home and leave their families behind. And, you know, it was just, it was hard. It was hard to write. So two totally different, you know, I think both are going to be extremely entertaining. And there's full of thrills. So any thriller fan, I think will enjoy both, but one is super emotional and, for a reason, you know, so.
Yeah. I love it, brother. I'm looking forward to it. If there's one thing I love doing with this show is I love supporting authors, you know, solid authors. And I'm trying to figure out how many times you've been on a show as either a co-host or I guess maybe once co-host a bunch of times, right?
Yeah. A handful of times.
And then I was trying to get Ema Adair. I'm going to give her a shout out to jump on, but she had an appointment this morning. And definitely going to have you back on again. I love having you as a co-host, but I also love having you as a guest. I'm so excited for Unknown Rider. I'm going to purchase the audiobook. And you know what I do with Audible is I do actually do like the 3 credits a month or whatever.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
I'm like, it's for one, it's cheaper. And two, it's like I can roll through audiobooks like it's nothing. Yeah. And that's where like I keep talking about Sons of Valor because I just came back. I took a trip out to North and South Carolina and I'm like, I finished the whole thing. I'm like back and forth. I'm like 14 hours in a row. Okay, we got this.
Yep.
And it's like, I love it, man. I'm super excited for this one, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. You know, and yeah, I always love coming on the show. You do such a good job. And I obviously love listening to it too. You've got some, you know, really unique perspectives on different topics that are completely unrelated to the thriller, you know, writing world, which you have effortlessly, you know, put yourself into. But just, you know, other things, you know, with the human trafficking and, you know, experiences as a you know, law enforcement agent. I mean, you know, I really enjoy listening to the show.
I'm looking forward to having you back on, brother. And you know, what I love doing lately is getting on the road and doing in-person interviews. So I got to roll out to Texas sometime and just sit down behind a mic.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome anytime.